Tejasvinavadhitamastu mabhidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shribasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. So then we have Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarna 3, Bhakti alone is the conclusion of all scriptures. Right? So this point that's being made here, and having that, you know, understanding of it, that faith in it, that commitment to it, you know, that, so what, you know, to some degree, that's the symptom of nishta. You know, where the nishta is fixed, right? So that's the ideas that this point here. The other one is that you give up all the demigods, all those things. Those things might be there on the platform of anartha nivriti, but then when you come to this point here, then you understand. So this is nishta, and so then you appreciate that. Yes, there is nothing else that will give you anything. You can try all these different things, but we always have to remember is everybody has tried to the best of their ability to get something without, you know, something more without devotional service since time immemorial, and it's never worked for any of them. So why would it work for us? Right? You know, so that's the foolishness that we see in the modern, I mean, any materialistic society, is that no one has ever actually attained to a platform that they feel that this is the best, and then been able to maintain that. But again and again, people keep trying to do it, but it's never worked. It's never actually been able to work. So this is not an intelligent society. They claim to be scientific and this and that. But when you have a science experiment that's been run for thousands and thousands of years, and there's no case of anybody actually known for being happy, then there may be something wrong with it. And if you don't accept that, that's not scientific, that's sentimental. Right? Yeah. So then continuing here on page 47, in the 11th canto, the discussion between Maharaj Nimi and Navayogendras establishes the superiority of bhakti over all other processes. It is elucidated here that one obtains freedom from all fear only by the steady performance of bhakti, and thus bhakti is the greatest remedy for all material entanglements, right? So we see is that you have the from all fear. And so that fear of you know, the difficulties and this and that and all the different points. So fear gives rise to the desire for liberation. And so if it gets rid of fear on all these fears, all fear, that means it's removed the fear from liberation. It naturally removes the fear of karma. And so that means then it situates you on the transcendental platform. So only bhakti can do that. No other system can do that other than devotion. The karma and jnana cannot get rid of that fear. There's still that fear, and you know, of what will happen to the situation, or you know, maybe not the specific, but the generic about, you know, being on that liberated platform. So there's always that anxiety. So bhakti alone can do that. So it removes all fear, and you see is that if that devotional aspect is there, that fearlessness is there, one is unaffected. Hearing about the auspicious birth and activities of the Supreme Lord, and singing his names, which describe those activities, devoid of attachment to anything else, is the process of pure bhakti. However, unless one has full faith in the devotional process, one cannot perform these activities all the time. Hence, one Hence, one to not give up one's occupational duty till one develops full faith in the process. Hence, one should not give up one's occupational duty till one develops full faith in the process of bhakti. Such occupational duty should be performed with detachment by offering the results of karma to the Supreme Lord. So here's then the point is that, see, is first it has to be accepted without any but this and but that, that no, only through bhakti can you actually attain to the topmost platform. There's just no question, there isn't anything else. Then, having accepted that yes, only through bhakti, and it's only by dedicating ourselves to bhakti that we can get any real lasting benefit, and not through any other process can we get that results, you know, even though how much we try and how expert. When we have that faith that, yes, that's there, then you can look at it, now how do I apply that to myself? So in applying it to myself, then yes, okay, I'm not on that platform where I'm free from all fear and all that. I have faith in that process, but it doesn't have that. Yon remains until I come to that platform, but I'm doing it without attachment. I'm offering results to Krishna because I'm doing it for his pleasure. And so this way, then you have that aspect of having that full faith connected to the Lord, and one is able to develop. So that works very nice. So for the neophyte, that he has at least faith theoretically that yes, it's a bhakti process. He may, you know, have that attachment to these other things, but he's committed to the idea that, no, it's about this position of bhakti is the supreme platform. Then he performs his duties. He may have his attachments, but at the end of the day, he then tries to offer those results to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. Whether he's remembering that or not during the performance of the activities, that will come with time as one gets purified. Then one comes to the point where one has that full faith. There is nothing else. At least the form of the activities are done, but the activities are being done just for Krishna. So it's already Krishna's in the performance of the activity, and then one is more absorbed in the Lord. But one's engaging the conditioned nature according to its nature, because the nature has to be engaged so that the religious processes are giving that support. Otherwise, then, you know, what will one do? But then when one comes to that Uttam platform, then that platform of bhava, then one is so absorbed in the devotional activities that the material activities have no importance, and therefore the addressing the conditioned nature is as an occupation is not important anymore. One doesn't have to do it, but we see is that these great acharyas and great personalities for preaching then function on the Madhyama platform by performing the direct occupational duties of devotional service, and depending upon their position, then they may add in these other external forms of religious activities to in their performance of pure bhakti, and that way then they set up and so then that works very well. We see how it the same process will work for all three levels. It's just that on the neophyte level, we're doing our occupational duties because of our particular interest in them. And then, it can have that mixed aspect. Or one has that faith, but there's still that attachment. The purification is not as much. But in any case, still it goes on. So one can be a third-class pure devotee, you know, because one doesn't know the philosophy so much in this, but that inherent faith and all that is there. So that's why you see those devotees in 60s and 70s, Baba said, that they're all pure devotees, because even though they may not know as much, that they would do very nicely because of that, because of that faith that, yes, it's only devotional service. Then when it comes to the Madhyama platform, then that faith is more fixed, it becomes that Dridharata. And so then coming to that platform, or that Dridharata, and so then one is simply engaging the conditioned nature, whatever it is. You look at the conditioned nature, it's not us, but still that's the form that you can use to interact with the world and everything like that, and to help, you know, preach and do things to, for others. Then at the Uttama platform, one doesn't have to address that at all. One doesn't need to have a secondary supportive religious process, because now your hearing, chanting, and absorption of the Lord is all direct now. It all becomes non-different. Even though you could say that these are different aspects, because it's in the fire of pure bhakti, it takes on that quality. So you don't need to make a distinction, just like Mother just showed it. You don't need to make a distinction between her Stai Bhava of parental rasa and her the Anubhavas of cooking for Krishna. They're all on the same platform. It's all pure rasa. But to preach, they will take that platform of the Madhyama, and then they will, you know, according to whatever is their situation that they're in, they will then accordingly then perform duties and all that as much as is necessary. The grihastha, they'll involve themselves more. If they're not, they'll involve themselves less and just stick more to the direct activities. Does that all make sense? That the yes, no, pretty good. Okay. One who hasn't developed full faith in the direct process of bhakti may perform the indirect process of karma yoga, or better than that, perform karma yoga with inclusion of bhakti and ahangro asana. However, even those who follow these prescribed methods will fall down from their position if they don't worship the Supreme Lord, because they disrespect the Lord. Right? So there has to be the aspect of that. You have the aspect of the, if you can't, don't have that full faith, then you act within karma yoga, you know, or even the aspect of the jnana yoga, you know. So, but if you don't, but it's indirect because it is. The devotional process is about doing these things for Krishna. And then, so there's that respect of the Lord, because the other is that the karma is important, or you're going to Krishna just to get the effects of those things. But at least it's proper. You're going to the Lord. So depending upon the degree that's there, so those people who, you know, follow the Vedas and do their karmas and all that, that's better than someone who just doesn't bother with these, with performing their duties. You know, it's just whatever their attachments are, they follow those and that. So someone who does because they feel, these are my duties, it's going to be higher. Those duties are given by scripture and are authorized, then that's even more, right? So then you see as it naturally goes up. So whatever people may see about the Hindu Bindus is that there's a sense of duty based on Shastra, you know, or about those who are very religious and all that, whatever they are. Even the Abrahamic background of this and that, they feel there's a sense of duties that they have that comes down that traditionally is part of their line. So they identify it as a religious aspect. Whether it is or not is another thing, whether it's God-given or not. But at least they're accepting it that way, so that they're doing it because of that, then that's better. If follow the Vedas, then better than that. You know, then they take up that process of karma, then they accept the understanding about the soul, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. That takes us even better than that. But if they don't take up that proper direct worship of Krishna, these five direct activities, then they can fall down out of disrespect. That's why these five activities are always going on, you know, whenever it's available. But the hearing, chanting, associating with devotees, reading Bhagavatam, living in the Dham, worshiping the deities, these are always going on because these are the direct activities of pure bhakti, of those who have that faith. And so even if we don't have where is, you know, it'll be karma misra bhakti. You know, but as it is becomes the main thing, then the bhakti becomes the main, then it gives up that karma misra bhakti. It'll be pure bhakti. So one just has to see is that it's your duties, you're doing them to please Krishna, and there's no attachment for them. So it brings you to that Madhyama platform. So yeah. On the other hand, the devotees need not perform sacrifices for worshipping the demigods, and he has no fear of any obstacles created by the demigods, because the Lord gives complete protection to its devotees. So that's the whole point of the Govardhan pastimes, you see there is that they don't have to worry about these demigods, right? So many other instances, but especially that one, you know, that directly the king, the king of heaven, who, you know, manages in that the universe. He's not the supreme, you know, authority. Brahma will be above him, but still, as far as the day-to-day management, you know, he's like the, you know, he's the temple president of the universe, you know, like that kind of thing. And so then he goes against Krishna because of the devotee, goes against Krishna's devotees, actually, and that he doesn't understand Krishna. And so then it's not that the situation, it means they can apply a situation that might not be nice, but the point is how did it work out? Krishna, in a wonderful way, protected them by lifting Govardhan Hill. Then for one full week, they're 24 hours with Krishna. Everybody, you know, loves Krishna so much, they want to be with Krishna more. Because in the Astakaliya Lila, everybody has a certain time of the day that they're with Krishna. Whether it showed in the morning, in the evening, you know, the cowherd boys during the, you know, during the late morning and late afternoon, you know, the gopis during the midday and during the midnight, you know, they all have their time, but they always wish it was more, wish it was 24 hours. So Krishna gave them the opportunity for that. So even though around was not so great, you know, no one was eating or sleeping or that for 20, but it was more ecstasy because they were so absorbed in Krishna. Krishna was interacting with every one of them. So one has to understand this. Circumstances might not always be favorable, but the point is the relationship with the Lord and the reciprocation of the Lord always is. And that's the real point that we're looking for, because that works out. So, okay. So that's why we don't have to worry about the demigods and, oh, if we don't please them, this will happen. That. So that's why we don't have to we please the planets and this and that either. We please Krishna, you know. Does that make sense? So that then takes on the point. Is that, yeah. The same principle is asserted later in this canto, where Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava on the principles of devotional service. When the Supreme Lord mentions about the meditation on Brahman, Uddhava rejects it and expresses his desire to perform pure bhakti following the footsteps of the gopis. Because, you know, he's seeing that the gopis at 100% absorption, it doesn't necessarily mean the kind of service they're doing. That's how they're expressing it. It's that full surrender of the gopis. Then any devotee who understands this would like to have that kind of surrender like the gopis. So therefore you see Uddhava, you know, Dwarka, then Bhishma Dev, you know, from Hastinapur, you know, Indraprastha, that connected, you know, they're connected to Dwarka, and he has that mood. And so there's always that mood of that they're the greatest devotees because the surrender is the greatest, and one would like to have that kind of surrender. Though they will express through their service their particular position, that they wish that they could improve the quality of their service to that level, that it has that complete, simply for Krishna's satisfaction. Yeah. It is recommended that a person desiring Brahma Jnana should take shelter of bhakti yoga, as liberation, which is the goal of jnana, is a byproduct of bhakti. It is then specified that a person who has natural faith in hearing about the topics of the Lord is qualified for pure bhakti. And such a person should always engage in hearing, chanting, remembering, and enacting the Lord's pastimes, disregarding the process of Brahma Jnana. Such pure bhakti becomes steady in the heart of a person who associates with the Lord's devotees. By worshiping the Lord with a taste of bhakti, attained through the association of pure devotees, he easily attains Sarup Jnana of the Lord as Brahman and Bhagavan. All right, so then we see that brings us to that level that we were seeing before, that the position of the Bhagavad Sandarbha is you understand the position of the Lord as the Supreme Brahman, but you also understand his position as Bhagavan. Right, so you see as those two naturally go together. Before, you're just seeing how, you know, all pervading, this and that, the unlimited and all that aspects of the Lord. Though they are aspects of the Lord, that's the Brahman aspect. But then the natural next one is you see is that No, all these qualities come from the person. That's actually the next important thing. It's not that that and then Paramatma. It's a matter of, unless you understand in context of Bhagavan, then how do you get to the understanding that as Bhagavan, then as Paramatma, then controls everything? Because otherwise, who is this Paramatma? Right? It's the person who's doing that role. So naturally, then you're going to, you know, have the establishment in the scriptures and in authority, and actually what is bona fide and what's not, you know, what's the proper understanding of things. Then you're going to get the understanding of how that all-pervading, and how that, you know, how everything's connected, Lord, and Lord is not different from everything because he is existence. That all that principle is coming from a person. It's the person who is all-pervading, the person who is all existence. And so when you see those two together, then you have something. Then you can go to the next of Paramatma, how then he as Paramatma, as Bhagavan as Paramatma, not he, how he controls everything, all his energies. He controls the universe. He controls, you know, all the planetary systems, the creation, maintenance, destruction, everything like that. Then once that is there, then you can see as yes, but beyond this, that person, that supreme person, he has his own mood and personality and likes and all that, and he is absorbing himself in the transcendental service. I mean service to his devotees, and the devotees are service to him. And that reciprocation, that love, that's actually the highest principle. Because the first one on the Bhagavat Sandarbha platform, you're understanding he is a person, though you're not getting into the details. You understand Satchitananda and these kind of things and the principal aspects, but him expressing his personality and relationship with the Lord, that is all then based on the Bhagavan platform. So we see in Nectar Devotion, it's explaining all wonderful things about Krishna and how he does things, but it's more how the devotee is trying to surrender, relate to Krishna, and absorb himself in Krishna. Then when it goes into the second part of the ocean, the southern part of the ocean, there, then he gets into Rasa. And so that's about Bhagavan. So the first thing he does is describe the 64 qualities of Krishna, because this is the Vishaya. This is the Lord who is the enjoyer, and the devotee as the Ashraya has love for that person. Right? And so having understood that, then you can see then how those qualities are then applied in the various situations in relationship to the devotees. That's where then the rasa is tasted. Does that make sense? So there's a natural progression. Yes, please.
Yesterday we were reading in one of the purports to the first canto, Srila Prabhupada explains how his father introduced him to general devotional service. And even when he was, you know, 5 years old, he used to worship Radha Govinda and doing the Rath Yatra festival with the kids in the neighborhood, etc., etc. But then Srila Prabhupada mentions that after that time, he went to school and college and he forgot about it. But then when he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then his service to the Lord was specified. So this is the process from general to specific. And, mm-hmm. you know, Srila Prabhupada gives his personal example by how we should follow that process.
Yes, yes, yes. It's, you see it also in the Nectar Devotion, the first five chapters are Samanya Bhakti. Sometimes there's a, what do you call it? Because you have aspects where in Samanya Bhakti means it gives the overall general overview of bhakti, but it's not getting the specifics of the practice. It's just showing that it's there and everything like that. So because it also talks about Rag Bhakti, Prema Bhakti in those first five chapters, some will opine that it's actually not Samanya Bhakti. You know, you're talking about all this and that. But then the point is it's just the knowledge of it, that it's there, it exists. And this is what it's superior. This is what should be done. This is what should be followed. Then we see from the sixth chapter, then Rupa Goswami starts giving the details of Vaidhi Bhakti. So the 64 items of devotional service are given, and then he starts explaining. Then he explains about the mood of rag and how that point of raganuga comes up, that it's the same thing, but now you're doing it because it's not that you intellectually think that, oh, this is good, I should do this. You actually have that faith, and this is what you just like to do. It's your value. It's become realized. Right? And then when that deepens, then it goes into Bhava Bhakti and then into Prema Bhakti. And so then that ends the description of the eastern side of the ocean of Bhakti. Right? And then, as we said, we went into the southern with all the Udipan and all that. What are the five aspects of rasa? You know, the Stai Bhav, the Vibhav, Anubhav, Sanchari Bhav, and Satvika Bhavas. So that's the idea. Devotees are doing, and it's very specific. They're leading a kirtan, they're doing an arti, but for them it's just, these are devotional activities that go on, and they're not specifically committed to following them, right? So it's still samanya bhakti. So the kids do, they may worship the deity, but they're not doing all the different details and this and that. They have their, I remember there was one kid in the school that the rocks in the garden, so he'd go and find two rocks that are a little bit longer than wide, you know, the biggest he could find that are about the same and like that, and then he'd go over to a tree and put them at the base of the tree, standing next to each other. And then he'd get some leaves and this and some flowers, and he'd start doing puja. This is Gorni Thai. Right? So this is Samanya Bhakti, that he knows that this is there, and he's involved in it, and he's doing, you know, or like, you know, we have that Prabhupada saying about his example, or we see like Saraswati, when she was like, I think, 3 years old, she had a little deity of, you know, about this big of Jagannath. She had a string tied around his waist, and she's dragging him on the floor. And she's going, Rath Yatra. So the parents, they freak out, but the Prabhupada said, no, it's a big Rath. It's a whole festival going on. So that's Samanya Bhakti. So you can't say that practice, that's not Bhajana Kriya. Because, no, it's not following all the rules, but it's Samanya Bhakti. They're doing and all that. So you encourage it. So therefore, if she likes to do that, get her a little cart, and then she'll pull. You see, it's not that, oh, no, I'd rather drag Jagannath on the ground. I don't need a cart. You know, it's like, they're not. She's not saying like that. It's just that in her mind that when you're pulling the cart, you're pulling Jagannath, right? So the rope pulls Jagannath. So therefore, if you tie the rope around Jagannath and pull, that's Rath Yatra. So they're not. So we're seeing the cart, the rules. We're not necessarily seeing Jagannath. She's just seeing Jagannath, and you pull Jagannath with a rope. So this is Samanya Bhakti. And naturally it will mature with the association of devotees. So that's what he's saying, is that he, you know, in that association, then he was doing Samanya Bhakti. He had that faith, he was doing the Samanya Bhakti. But then, you know, by association in school and college, as we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur talk about, that you go to school, you become educated, you think you're, you know, doing something really wonderful and advancing nicely and all these kinds of things, you know. But then by Krishna's arrangement through a friend's insistence, then Prabhupada meant Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then from that association, now he came to the point of knowing specifics of devotional service, right? And so specifics of his service and like that. So print books, you know, preach in the West in English like this. And so then that's that aspect. So we see even the acharyas, when they go through the system, even though they're working on such a high, you know, on a completely different level, on the they still go through these stages as if they're going through the Shraddha the Prema. You know, it may just be I like there, that association, and immediately then, you know, he's fixed in that, you know, he's removed. And then what's happening in there? He's associating with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, right? That first time. And so now what's the discussion? right? You know, they're not just talking Gopi Baba and rolling on the ground. He's saying, no, but unless India is free, how can we fight for, how can we practice devotional service? You know, India has to be free from this, you know, the outside influence of foreigners and be under their own self-rule. Then we can practice bhakti, right? You know, until, you know, we have this standard of this modern contemporary standard, then we can't practice bhakti. That sound familiar? Right? So it's the same thing. So therefore, in that conversation, anartha nivritti is also. So bhajana kriya, what you should do, then anartha nivritti, then he's fixed in that. And that's what he does. He starts preparing in all those things. Then he meets later, and then they go into something deeper. He takes initiation, you know, and all those things. And then you see just this goes on. Because they'll always act as a madhyama. But you see that, you know, they can sit and all that, showing that taste for the holy name, that faith in the holy name, the attachment. So he's sitting down on the sidewalk in Tompkins Square Park and chanting alone for 3 hours a day. And then with time, people start noticing him there. Because in a park, how much park space is there in New York? Right? So in that area, then Tompkins Square Park is one of the main parks. And so then people in that locale will come there, you know, for their walks or just to sit and read or get out in the open, out of their apartment. And so then they're going to see, and after a while, they're going to be hearing this, their heart's going to be purified. And then they're going to start coming around and wondering what's going on. And then there'll be conversations, there'll be discussions. And then they will also then start this process of Samanya Bhakti, and then, you know, like the association, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Nartha Nivritti, until they get that Shraddha, yes, I'm going to take this up and practice this. And then you have 26 Second Avenue. So it's always this process is going on. It's just, you know, it's just that, for we see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada, it's one sitting that they're going through all these different things. You know, or Narottam Das Thakur, right? He goes down to take his bath in the Padma, and then Lord Chaitanya has left with Jamuna Devi some prema for him. And so when he takes bath, then, you know, then he goes through all this, that, you know, he's going through, he's taking his bath because there's this regular thing, but then he comes to that platform of prema, you know, or manifesting, you know, the attachment and all these different things. And so they're going to, in some way or another, the acharyas are going to show these things. Some may be very quick, you know, and some may take a longer time, like Srila Prabhupada is showing that it can take a longer time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, that prayer, Vidyara Vilasa, is showing how it's taking a whole lifetime before he figures it out. And so then the point is, but they go through these stages. And so then naturally, then we come up. So the acharyas are put. So here, and Prabhupada says, we'll go through all these levels. So we'll appreciate how Krishna is all pervading. But then we'll see actually it's the person that's all pervading. And it's the person who's controlling everything. And it's the person who's having the relationship with the devotees and then being absorbed in rasa. Right, and then we see as Sanatana Goswami, as the Sambandha Acharya, then he's giving us, you know, you have all these different realms, and then so the topmost of all the realms in the materialist spiritual worlds is Praja, and then of all the levels of bhakti, then, you know, of that being practiced here and in Vaikuntha and Dwarka and Mathura, then Vrindavan is the highest. And then of that, the gopis, and then, you know, of all the different devotees and the gopis and Srimati Radharani. So you see that whole thing being done with Ramananda Rai. You're starting off with practicing Varnashram according to your duties, as is just mentioned here. The Acharya is mentioning that. He said it's external. It doesn't mean he's throwing out Varnashram like is the popular misconception. He's throwing that the Varnashram is the ultimate goal. No, it's the secondary religious process to help the primary religious process, the sub-dharma of service to Krishna. And so then he, you know, is being taken up. So we're going to see is that these are always going to come up in all these, and we're going to go through that from that and go up through these levels. And that's why then, you know, they're pointed out what they are, what is there, and then you have the shrumba. You know, that familiarity with the Lord, that sense of service, that sense of appreciation. So the appreciation doesn't go. It's just that when you add service into it, the service becomes more prominent. The appreciation remains. When you add in Vishramba, the service remains, and the appreciation, just that it's that closeness to the Lord, you know, comes up. Then that care for the Lord and that, like that, that gets to the point of the gopis. You know, and then of the gopis, it's not about us or this or that. It's about Srimati Radharani. It's about the happiest of Srimati Radharani. And so therefore, we want to see Radharani with Krishna. That's our determination, because we want to make the Krishna the happiest we can make him. And we being insignificant little jivas, then how much we can add? Krishna is unlimited. We're not. Even on the transcendental platform, when we become liberated, we're still 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. It's not that that changes. It's just that now we're functioning on the platform of Brahman. So then taking that up, then we see is that we can add to assisting in Radharani being with Krishna. And we don't know how to do that. And Rupa Goswami knows. And the Acharyas know. And Srila Prabhupada knows. And this way we connect with the devotees in serving Srila Prabhupada, in serving Rupa Goswami, serving Radharani as her manservant. And so that aspect, then we have that faith in all that. But that doesn't change that, okay, we have that understanding, but, you know, we're still in a position that requires taking care of things connected with the conditioned nature or this or that. And so therefore, then, you know, these secondary aspects of karma are used. But how much of it we use? We're not using the whole thing. We're only using... We're not interested in all the smarta vidhi and the worship of the demigods and all this. We're only interested in how much it just is effective in maintaining ourselves, you know, in the family and social environment in which we can serve Krishna. So we can see is that what Prabhupada gave us in Varnashram is the Daiva Varnashram system. So it's not that something new needs to be established. It's what Prabhupada already established that has to be taken, you know. So it's just a matter of lack of understanding or lack of full understanding of what's there. So we don't have to add in more details that Prabhupada didn't put emphasis on. We have to take those points that he did and learn, like he talks about cleanliness. So then what is the standard of cleanliness and how does that work? You know, and then we see within the context of how we're doing, and then it becomes very nice. We don't have to add in, you know, demigod worship and Shraddha, you know, the yearly Shraddha rites, and other, we don't have to do any of that. We just worship Krishna, and we perform our occupational duties that, you know, maintain, and that's it. You know, the brahmacharis, they do what they're supposed to do, following under their authority, that's already in place. Anuprastas, then they see, okay, what things, you know, are helpful in my devotional service, maintain that. What things are, you know, an extra work and not so necessary. And that and those things are cut back or dropped. You know, so then that way, then very nicely, the whole system goes on. You know, and ultimately, we're all trying to get that mentality of sannyas that it's all for Krishna. So that's then what's trying to be. And so then everything's in place, right? The Brahmins will do that through their education and these kind of activities. Kshatriyas will do it through administration. Vaishyas will do it through economics. And the Shudras will do it through assisting others. So what hasn't Prabhupada already established? What hasn't he explained? You know, and so if you understand what Prabhupada said, then you look at Manu, and then you can see this, okay, these things we can add, and these things are not so necessary. And add means it's just a more depth of understanding. But it's not that it's already not there. You'll see is that, as Prabhupada, he's explaining it already, just in very pleasant, nice language. Is that good? Yeah? Okay. Uddhava then presents his query to Krishna as to which sadhana process is the best to attain him. Lord Krishna begins his explanation by describing that bhakti is the only eternal process because it arises from the Lord's sarup, and it is spoken to Brahma at the beginning of creation. So bhakti comes from Krishna's sarup. It's inherent in him. It's not different from him. So it's not coming from something that's coming from something that's coming from something. It's directly his sarup. All other processes are temporary and were invented by sages according to their individual natures. Right? So all these other things, putting emphasis on that, that's other sages give their rise to those things and put that emphasis there according to their particular nature. You know, and so these things can be helpful for assisting in bhakti. You know, just like that means if you have that serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna through devotion is the actual point of the Brajvasis, but they want to express that, right? Because when you have that mood, that bhava, the vibhava, it gives rise to anubhava, which is to perform something. So anubhava will be, then you perform an activity to please Krishna. And then to perform that activity, then you have an environment. The environment then expands from that. So in other words, there's ananda, then there's sat, and I mean there's chit, and then there's sat. So in the environment of sat, then you perform the activities of chit, that gives Krishna pleasure, ananda. But ananda is actually the point. That's the root. Existence isn't the root. That's just where things are. Right? Because if there's ananda, that means it has to exist. So that means it's already inherent. So Yeah, so these sages, they bring out these to engage people because they're not seeing this point. They're not seeing that Krishna's pleasure is the actual goal. So therefore, then at least they keep themselves busy with an idea that is progressive and at some point they can come forward, though it's all part of the slow path. Bhakti is the quick path, so through bhakti, very quickly you can come to this platform. Further, the Supreme Lord declares to Uddhava that he is only attained by pure bhakti and not by austerities, Vedic study, following Dharma, mystic yoga, etc., because all of the processes can't purify one's consciousness completely. So only pure bhakti can purify the consciousness. That's why the direct activities of bhakti are the real thing. So people are thinking, oh, through the yoga, we're going to bring him up to the mode of goodness. It's like good luck. They're there because of the mode of passion. They want to be healthy. They want to look good. They're bored. You know, they want like this and that. They want some exercise. That's what they're there. And they think they're the body. And so what are you introducing to them doing yoga that's going to bring into the mode of goodness? We're thinking that, oh, yoga itself is mode of goodness. No, it's only mode of goodness if it's done for, because that's the process, that's your duty. That's the process of self-realization. But they're doing it because of mode of passion and ignorance. So how is it that this yoga studio program is going to bring them to that platform without the purifying element of bhakti, direct bhakti, of chanting the holy name, hearing about the glories of the Lord and all these things? How will it do that? You know, it would be interesting. Well, how do they think it will actually purify? And if they go, you know, the Yoga Sutras say this, this, and this, are these people doing that? You do realize that the asanas and the pranayama that the yoga studio spends all this time on are preliminaries before you get down to actually doing real yoga, which is connecting with the Supreme, meditating. How long do they meditate? You know, 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes? I've even been told that most yoga studios stop doing pranayama because people can't relate to it. Too technical for them. They can sit in the asana because, you know, it feels good and this and that, and they can sit there and meditate on something. What do they meditate on? Are they meditating on Vishnu? Or are they meditating on what they're going to eat for lunch? You know, so except for these aspects of pure devotional service, what is going to purify them in modern yoga practice? Because you see, the guy goes into yoga, right? And he looks like whatever he looks like. come back after a year of his yoga practice, what does he look like? Got the long hair back in a bun, got that little bit of a beard. You know, he's got his cool duds on. You know, like. It's not purifying, except unless you use the points of pure body. As what they're using, are they actually purifying at all? You know, there is something, yeah, you're coming in contact with yoga, are you following Shastra and stuff like that? So, you know, you have to see what's going on. Hence, to the degree one's consciousness is purified by engaging in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, to that degree one can perceive its real form, qualities, and sweet pastimes. There isn't something else. No, it's that yoga along with that will bring him to the topmost. No, it's only by pure bhakti you'll bring him to that topmost. You may start off in a yoga studio. Prabhupada started off in a yoga studio, but he gave it up because he saw who's serious. You know, and if you could make people serious, great. But the point is getting them to the point where they're serious and now they're, you know, doing the activities of devotees. But if you still haven't known they only wear yogi pants and this and that and don't dress up as devotees, no tilak, then how far are you getting them? You're only bringing them to the point of samanya bhakti. Right? You only bring them to samanya bhakti. So nice. But don't try to claim that this samanya bhakti is on the same platform as pure bhakti. One should never try to do that. And if one is, one's doing, then what is, who does that? Who takes the lower level and tries to present it at there on the higher level? Right? You know, so you have the karmis and the gyanis. So the gyanis aren't in the way of action, right? So that leaves the karmis. And so who's doing the karma that they think they're on an advanced level of devotional service when they're not? It's called the sahajiyas. So it's sentiment, you know? Or they're identifying them a big, great devotee and all that and stuff like that. Then that may have these problems to it. And so one has to understand this. No, there's difference. It's a chintya beta beta tattva. You don't understand it. It doesn't mean that it's not there. Like that. Now, some question or some comment or no? Yes.
Yes.
Please.
Well, we've noticed that Srila Ji. Abhideya and bhakti as an abhideya, the central feature, although it is obvious then if people follow karma that their sambandha and prayojana are off, but still Jiva Goswami says no, you should practice bhakti. And then for the gyanis is the same, their sambandha and prayojana are different, so it's not aligned in a sense. But still, Jiva Goswami says, no, you should follow bhakti. But then for us, it's very easy and natural because Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, how Srila Prabhupada presents it, it's all aligned. So it's a natural development. But still, if it's unnatural or so-called, like people don't understand, but even that, Jiva Goswami really nails it down to the bhakti should be the abhideya.
Yes. Yes, it has to be, because it means that primary aspect of pure bhakti, that's what you're trying to do. Secondary, as he mentions, if you don't have that faith isn't developed that much, then you can keep all that. So notice he says if the faith's not so developed, then they may be used, you know, to that degree is necessary. So that's why it's important to, it should be known as it is. Otherwise, some people say, no, we're Westerners were, you know, we can't do all these things and all that, and we need this food and that food and all these kind of things. Even though the same people might, you know, every few weeks take on a completely new diet that has nothing to do with Western food. You know, something in a blender that someone came up with. I mean, where is food out of a blender? You know, you taking this and that and everything and throwing it. Where is that a Western thing? It's a new thing. You know, it may be a health food thing, but does that mean it's Western? It's automatically, therefore, everybody can do it. So everybody can follow modern Western health food stuff? No. So it's completely bogus, this thing they are attached. And they're trying to say is that we're doing this and it's on an equal level. And in fact, it's even better because it's being honest and straightforward and having all these wonderful, you know, mundane qualities and things like that. But as you're pointing out, is that the bhakti is wrong here. The abhide is wrong because they're taking the primary and replacing it with not even secondary that is given, that's recommended in the scriptures. They're coming up with tertiary and quaternary things. Okay, we're Westerners, we eat Western this and that, but you know, how is that defined? It's not, it's just whatever people think. And so that means that it goes into the tertiary. And then, oh, but then, you know, in this health food thing, the latest thing is, you know, take this and that, toss it in the blender and do this and that and so many things, and then drink it while standing on your head with a straw. And so then, you know, through your nose, you know, and so all these things is that it just gets more and more detailed. And you come back after 6 months and the people who are professing that aren't even doing it anymore. You know, how long can you go on with it? Overly, a diet that's overly emphasizing one thing. After a while, in the beginning, it's great, but after a few weeks or a few months, depending on what is your need, the bodily needs, the what do you call that when there's a shortage of something in the body?
Deficiency. We lost it. It seems Maharaj has an internet deficiency.
Yeah.
Charachandra Prabhu, can you tell me what is the meaning of tertiary?
Tertiary,
how to spell it?
Primary, secondary, and then tertiary, so it's after secondary. So tertiary means third. And I would probably spell it wrong if I tried to just do it now, but I think Aladar Vishay knows how to spell it.
P-E-R-T-I-A, tertiary, P-E-R-O-A, I think.
1 second. I want to...
T-E-R-T-I-A-R-Y.
T-E-R...
T-I-A-R-Y.
T-I-A...
R-Y.
R-Y?
Hmm.
I can't type it. Can you send it to me, please? So we lost Maharaj, huh?
Yeah, I think his internet is gone. I sent him a message. But
yes.
He couldn't see it now. I think then we should end.
Okay. Wow.
Okay, reply.
Wow.
They're saying internet is very slow for him.
Yeah. Bad luck. What to do?
Yeah, I sent him a message asking, should we end it?
Easier.
Okay. So we made it back just in time to... and the class. Yeah, somehow the internet just went out. Yes, at least attending all the major parts of the thing. I'll just read this last sentence. In conclusion, Lord Krishna declares that his devotee is the most intelligent person because by engaging in the devotional service, a devotional process, his material body, which is temporary and which undergoes deformation, he attains permanent residence in Goloka and also attains the Lord, who is the sweetest. Right? So you're taking something that's completely inferior and using it in such a way that you get the topmost benefit. Now that's the most intelligent. Right. Others are doing so many things and trying to do and create this perfect system. When everyone is perfect, then they can do this and that. But here it's just you're taking whatever is there, engaging it as it is in Krishna's service to the best of your ability, and in this way going back to Godhead. So it's perfect, a perfect system. So then, that's Krishna's, that, you know, so the 11th canto, he's describing that. That this is then the perfection, is that the go ahead, please.
On this verse, on this particular verse, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that this verse is like, you know, very important. I exactly don't remember what he commented, but he really emphasizes this verse that that's what we are all supposed to do. Nothing else more important.
Yes. Yeah. So when one has that faith, is the one saying no, but this and that until we have a great management system. We can't go on until we have, you know, the movement is purified. We can't go on until we have this or that. We can't go on. No, it's just you perform pure devotional service. Krishna arranges everything. Everything will go on and everything will be perfect. That's the real thing. Everything else is only because of our conditioning. We think that it's important. It can be used in Krishna's service, and that way it's engaged in what's important, but it on its own isn't important, you know, and especially in the contemporary time where they're taking, you know, really things that aren't that dynamic and trying to claim that these are the real things. and at the same time ignoring what the Vedas recommend as the actual authorized secondary religious principles. Those are rejected and then made up ones that don't have not proven themselves. They're not proven, right? You see is that society going on and stably going on has been done by very traditional methods. And it sustains society from being crazy. All these new kind of more leftist things, these are things that very rarely are used. And when they're used, they don't get any good result. 70 years of Russia, they had to reject communism because it didn't work. The whole thing collapsed. China also has rejected it. They say they're the Communist Party, but they're total autocratic capitalists. You know, there's no question of that. You know, they're just there. You know, they have their oligarchy and they run capitalism to make money. You know, so these things don't work. And so then if we're going to take those same things and claim that until these are in place, then you're going to be waiting until that time when the sun gets, 12 times brighter than it is now, not a good time to be hanging around. Yes? No?
Maharaj, I got that sentence, what he said.
And here then? Oh, okay, please.
This verse is the touchstone among verses, the essence of all the Lord's teachings. He who has this verse shining in his heart shines in the assembly of devotees.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Very good. So we'll come across it, right, as we go
through.
Then that verse will come up in the study, no?
Yes. 102 page number.
Very good. Okay. Okay, so we'll end here. Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.